This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. Fellas, you've heard the phrase, look good, feel good, right? But why not add smell good to that too? That's where Sterling Soap Company comes in. First, Sterling Soap is 100% natural and has a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne. Second, there's a scent just for you. How about burgundy? Yeah, it's more than a color. The Sterling Soap folks blend natural essential oils with hints of mahogany, golden amber, and sandalwood. Or how about D503, an intensely masculine scent inspired by Legend by Mont Blanc. And third, you will feel good about the price. For just a little more than you'd pay at the grocery store, Sterling Soap will leave you feeling clean, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. Give Sterling Soap a try today. Visit sterlingsoap.com. This day in sports history. Hey, and welcome back. Or if this is your first time here, thanks for checking out This Day in Sports History. It's April 21st, and on this day in 1980, it was one of the most bizarre moments in Boston Marathon history. When Rosie Ruiz crossed the finish line on Boylston Street, there were immediate questions. Bill Rogers, the men's winner for a record third consecutive time, didn't think that he could possibly be looking at the women's first place finisher, saying, "The second I saw her, I was skeptical. I know a top runner when I see one, and she didn't look tired." Ruiz was a 26-year-old who had just clocked a finishing time of 2 hours, 31 minutes, 56 seconds, the third fastest women's marathon run at that time. And this was more than 3 minutes faster than Joan Benoit's course record time of 2 hours, 35 minutes, 15 seconds run the year before. But this was only the second marathon Ruiz had entered. The time she used to qualify for Boston was the New York Marathon, with a time that was 25 minutes slower than her Boston time. She was an unknown in the running world, and either she was a phenomenon bursting onto the running scene, or she had cheated. But there wasn't anything immediate to prove that Ruiz had not won, but there was plenty of rumbling. Fans along the course had not seen Ruiz anywhere around the two women that everybody thought were battling it out for first and second. Unlike with the men, the time checks every 6 miles along the race course were not recorded for the women. Canadian Jacqueline Gouraud and American Patty Lyons finished several minutes after Ruiz and believed they had finished first and second. Lyons said the first time she saw Ruiz that day was when she was at the award ceremony. She was given the winner's medal, the laurel crown, and a silver bowl. Race officials kept hearing louder and louder calls that something was amiss and confirmed that they were suspicious. They would look into it. Here in the 1980s, cameras were not everywhere like they are today, of course, but they said they would review photos and video of the event as well as conduct interviews to form an opinion on whether the win was legitimate or not. And when they started looking for any photo or video evidence of Ruiz in the race, they simply could not find any. They didn't see anything prior to mile 25, confirming she had actually run the distance. And it was determined that she jumped into the race with about a mile to go. 8 days later, despite Ruiz insisting she had run the entire course, she was stripped of her title. So, of course, that led everybody to ask what happened and why. Well, simply enough, she severely miscalculated. Her intention was to jump into the middle instead of out in front of the 448 other women running that day. A friend of Ruiz said she confessed to him several months after the event, saying she didn't realize a woman had not run by yet. And when she crossed the finish line in first place, she was as shocked as everybody else. The why she even considered doing this in the first place has been speculated as well. After her New York Marathon finish, she boasted about her time. Her boss, a runner himself, told her that he would pay her entry fee and travel expenses to run Boston. So she did it to impress him and her colleagues. After she was revealed as a cheater, she was fired from that job. And then New York Marathon officials conducted their own investigation into her performance the previous year in their event and determined that she had not run the entire course then either. A freelance photographer named Susan Morrow contacted New York race officials after the Boston story broke that she distinctly remembered riding the train with Ruiz while the New York Marathon was in progress. Sadly, Ruiz's ruse overshadowed Roger's performance that day, and of course stole Garreau's limelight, who actually won the race and was credited as such more than a week later. Garreau's course record time was 47 seconds faster than Benoit's 1979 pace. But of course, nobody remembers what she did on that day. As for Ruiz, this was not the end of her troubles. In 1982, she was arrested for embezzling $60,000 from a real estate company she was working for, and in 83, she was arrested in a cocaine deal. She died in 2019 in Florida at the age of 66. Also on this day, in 1951, the Toronto Maple Leafs won the Stanley Cup in a series where all five games went into overtime. It was Bill Barilko's slap shot that beat Montreal's Jerry McNeil to give the Leafs the 3-2 win in Game 5. That they were in OT to begin with was a bit of a miracle. The Leafs trailed 2-1 late in the third when they pulled their goalie for the extra skater and tied it up with 32 seconds left in regulation. The Maple Leafs won the series 4-1 for their fourth Stanley Cup in 5 years. And in 1991, Notre Dame's Raheem Rocket Ismail decided to play in the Canadian Football League instead of the NFL. Of course, money had a lot to do with that. On this day, Ismail signed the richest contract in football history at the time, which was a 4-year, $18.2 million deal to play for the Toronto Argonauts. Ismail was projected to be the top overall pick in the upcoming NFL draft, but with a salary of a little more than $4.5 million a year, he was set to make more than $1.5 million more per year than the highest paid NFL player at the time, Joe Montana. He played 2 seasons in Toronto before his huge contract started to weigh on the cash-strapped Argos, and Rockets took his services to the LA Raiders, who locked up his rights in the 91 NFL draft. And time now for today's non-sports fun fact. Technically speaking, zebras are actually black with white stripes. That's all for today. I'll have more tomorrow on This Day in Sports History. This has been an original Thrive Suite production.
Hey there, sports history fans.
We've got some exciting news to share with you. 6 of our podcasts from the Sports History Network have made it to the final round of voting for the prestigious Sports Podcast Awards. Here are their shows and the categories. Historically Speaking Sports and This Day in Sports History are both competing for Best Sports Talk Podcast. No Nonsense Old School Weightlifting History is in the running for Best Fitness, Health, and Well-Being Podcast. When Football Was Football is up for Best Sports Documentary Podcast. Wrestling with Heels On has entered the ring for Best Wrestling Podcast. And Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing is fighting for the title for Best Combat Sports Podcast. Now, of course, we need your help to take home the championship for each of these awesome shows. All you gotta do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/vote, cast your vote for your favorite shows, or better yet, all 6 of them. Again, every vote counts, and we gotta show the world how much sports history really matters. So thank you for your support and making Sports History Network the headquarters for sports yesteryear. But again, don't wait. You got to go vote now. That's over at sportshistorynetwork.com/vote.